The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
This program was recorded on June 17th of 2015.
Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
Well, good evening, everybody. Amanda Richard here again with another episode of the Music Room. And tonight, we've got something totally and completely different for you. We've just got to find out what the heck's going on here. Jeremy Danneman's in the studio with us, and what we're listening to right now is...
That is me and my colleague. I play saxophone, and that's Sophie Zayasenga playing Inanga and singing, and another friend of ours clapping along, actually.
This is crazy. How did a sax player from Newark, Delaware end up playing in a subway station with a Rwandan musician?
Well, that's a long story.
We've got plenty of time.
Okay. It all started really in 2009. It was my birthday, and I decided instead of having a party, I was going to have a parade. And I lived in Brooklyn, and I still live in Brooklyn, and I took my saxophone, my alto, and I made a route. I went from Brooklyn to Queens, Queens to Manhattan. In Manhattan, I stopped and had a Unite the Nations concert in front of the United Nations. Continued through the East Village and then back to Brooklyn over the Williamsburg Bridge. So in all, it took like 10 or 11 hours. I had emailed my friends telling them the route and said if they wanted to join me for any leg of that, they were welcome. But if they didn't, that's fine too. It would just be a parade of one. And then this turned out to be the best birthday ever. I found that I really enjoyed I really enjoyed street performance. I enjoyed reaching people, just random groups of people, not when you go to a club or a theater or something. You're usually reaching like the same type of people at each place. There's a certain type of people that go to this place or that place, and that's just how it is, and that's fine. But it's fun when you're kind of reaching just all kinds of people, the mishmash, you know? And... So I wanted to do more of this. I got interested in the idea of doing more of it. And around that same time in spring of 2009, it was the 15th anniversary of the genocide in Rwanda. And I had been very interested in that topic because my grandparents were Holocaust survivors and I had been reading about Rwanda. So I kind of had this interest in street performance and this interest in Rwanda kind of going on at the same time. And I decided to start this project doing street performances in Rwanda. Now, about how I met Sophie Zayasenga, the other musician.
Well, hang on, there's a train coming into the station.
Okay. Okay, so Sophie plays Inanga, which is a very rare instrument. It's like a big board with one string wrapped around it 10 times. And although that wasn't my initial reason for going to Rwanda, I knew about this instrument from the Nonesuch Explorer series, a great kind of series of CDs that kind of featured different instruments and different music from around the world. So then I realized that the Inanga was like the national instrument of Rwanda, and I got there and told people, I have to get together with an Inanga player. I have to meet an Inanga player. So I was introduced to this very, very talented Inanga player, Sophie Zayasenga. and we played together at the Goethe Institute in Kigali. And another kind of interesting thing about her is she's the only professional female Inanga player in the world. You know, it's just kind of taboo for women to play Inanga, but her father, who was a very, very famous Inanga player, just decided to teach her, and so she learned how to play and plays very well and became the first professional female Inanga player.
Joining us in the studio right now is our up-and-coming music director.
My name is Sarah Sager.
We also have representing the Avenue C DJ team that brings you jazz on WVUD every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night from 9 to 11.
I'm Bill Barnett, bringing the jazz to you on Select Tuesdays.
Now, Jeremy, this is, I think this is just fascinating because you've taken busking to a whole new level. I know friends who busk to improve their chops, but you're busking to establish relationships.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's fun that way. I busk to establish relationships. Also, another thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately is it makes people watching more fun. I mean, you think that, you know, you get the impression that the busker wants to be watched, but kind of like the busker, at least in my case, I like to watch the people while I'm playing. I think that's a lot of fun because they do different things, you know. They look different. Some of them even dance really weird dances. So it's fun to watch the people when you're busking.
How did you get the idea of going to exotic locales like Rwanda, Cambodia, Vietnam to not just go there and hang out on the street and play, but to interact with the people?
Like, why not the States?
Well, as I had mentioned, I had taken an interest in Rwanda specifically because of the human rights situation there generally from the 90s. There was the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. And I was interested in that topic because so many of those stories were similar to stories I had heard from my grandparents' generation of Jews from Europe. That's what really established my interest in Rwanda. I wanted to go there and interact with those people and see it for myself, really. And Cambodia, you know, has a similar story. And yeah. While I was going to Cambodia, my father had suggested I go to Vietnam, too. He really wanted me to do that. He's a veteran of the Vietnam War, and he thought it would be another interesting place to do that. And it was. I actually met my wife playing in a park. I was playing saxophone in a park in Saigon, and that's where I met my wife.
You play with local musicians, then, when you travel?
Yeah, I always reach out to local musicians, and I play with people who play, you know, often different instruments. Like in Cambodia, I played with people who played like Cambodian flutes and Cambodian malleted and string instruments.
Now, I was wondering if you had knowledge of the those musical traditions beforehand and were able to play in that mode and join in, or if that's something you just picked up as you traveled and met the other musicians.
With Rwanda, I had heard Inanga music before, like Sophie's music, but it was different. It seemed to be a different style of Inanga playing. I found that in the African context in general, our music here is so influenced by African music mm-hmm. that we can really just like lock right in with one another. Mm-hmm. In Southeast Asia, there are also some different instruments that I was less familiar with, but then they've been influenced so much sort of by what we do.
Mm-hmm. then you it's a can feedback kind of loop.
Yeah, there's a one big feedback loop, really. Yeah.
So most people could recognize the saxophone. It wasn't a foreign object.
It was a foreign object to most audiences. Most audiences had never seen one before. Maybe on television. Sometimes it was referred to as that golden thing or something like that. there was one time I was playing on the bus in Rwanda. The driver turned off the radio while I was playing, and then I stopped. And according to my friend who was with me, and he's Rwandan, so he spoke in your Rwanda, people started grumbling, he should play that golden thing more.
Well, that sort of answers my next question, which is how the populace reacted to that unfamiliar instrument. Did they? I guess it sounds like they appreciated the sounds coming from it, because often, you know, unfamiliar instruments are not taken to that easily.
Yeah, that's true. For the most part, it was very appreciated. You know, I'll always remember the first time when I first got to Rwanda, my first day, I decided to go play next to the market. It was, you know, that pivotal moment where I'm seeing if this is going to work or if it's not. And then, you know, people started crowding around really before I had even finished assembling my saxophone. And, you know, with kids getting up like really close. And then I just started playing and more people crowded around. It really became kind of a big crowd. And then I realized that if I stopped playing, I was going to have to explain myself. Mm-hmm. So then I just had to keep playing even more. I don't know what's scarier, playing or trying to explain myself. And, you know, eventually, you know, I had to stop playing and people said, what's going on? What are you? Who are you? What's this? What are you doing? You know, there was like one guy who spoke English well in the crowd who translated and became friendly with me. And, you know, he helped me translate and tell my story and tell the people why I was there.
At your website, parade of one wordpress.com, there are a lot of pictures of kids and, mm-hmm. and other people just really seeming to enjoy interacting with this strange guy from America with his golden thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always reach out to sort of youth groups wherever I go, including the States. I do a lot of educational programming here. So in Rwanda, I was playing with a youth sort of dancing and drumming group, and we did a performance cool. in a local mall there, which was a lot of fun. And I generally do a lot of school visits and things like that wherever I go.
Well, before we get to you talking about things you do in America, Bill and I both really like Mutobo March.
Okay.
We'd like to let the folks hear that. Tell us about that song.
Mutobo March is a song I kind of wrote after a visit to a place called the Mutobo Rehabilitation Center, which is in Rwanda. And that's a place where soldiers or ex-soldiers who had been fighting in the Congo for like 12 or 16 years, some of them, they go to this rehabilitation center before being reintegrated to their communities. And it was a very special and interesting experience to meet these people and perform for them and have conversations with them. Because if you read about what they do in the news or what they have done, you know, it's really awful, the conditions they came from and the things that they actually did. But then you meet them and realize that they're just human like us. We'll be right back.
Tell the folks what they just heard, Jeremy.
That was a tune called Mutobo March from my recent release called Lady Boom Boom on Rope-A-Dope Records. That was myself on Barry Sax, William Parker on bass, and Tim Kuiper on drums.
Now, I was interested in how you got hooked up with William Parker, because he is a living legend in improvised music circles.
He's an amazing, amazing bass player, among other things. He plays actually a whole slew of instruments, and he's a great bass player, great improviser. I had been kind of like lurking around that scene for a while, and then I realized he would be really good for this project. At the time we recorded that album, we were kind of getting ready to record with Sophie too, and I had gotten in touch with William through the piano player Matt Shipp, actually. He was into the idea, so that's basically how that started.
Okay. Matt Shipp, another Delaware.
Yeah, another Delaware.
Do you know him from Delaware? Or?
I met him in New York, but we're both aware of being Delawareans. Be aware of Delaware.
Did you get your music start at Newark High?
Let's see. I started taking piano lessons when I was a little kid here from John Southard, and he's still probably giving lessons around here. So that was my real start with music. And then I started playing saxophone when I was 9 at independent school.
Okay.
And then I went to Newark High School.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the path.
You weren't in marching band, were you?
I was in marching band, yes. I certainly was.
That's your love of parades. Even if you have to walk by yourself. Now, one of the things that's really cool is when you're out there by yourself, you're on the street. Sarah and you were starting to talk about some of the issues that come up with busking.
Well, yeah, I guess when you launch into a very global context, you can't help but to compare to the United States. And, you know, we are consumers. We like our commercialism. And I just wanted to know how when, you know, going abroad, you take on a sort of celebration. And it's not about the money, and it's about inclusivity and not intruding on people's personal space. You talk about the public sphere as something that's shared and intimate. And I just think that's a great celebration over, profiteering.
Right, right.
You know, you went to pretty destitute places, and people are happy to find temporary relief or a little bit of joy in their lives. So I saw there's a picture of you in a dump, and you're just wailing away. Do you want to talk about that? Like a literal trash dump.
Well, yeah, there was a... That was in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, and I had a great assistant. You know, wherever I go, I usually end up with someone who sort of helps me out, does translation, and shows me around. And this guy had some good ideas, too. So he wasn't just, like, helping with random things. He had some ideas, and he's like, let's go play at the dump. And it was really interesting. There were, you know, people working there. So it was kind of like, I'm not sure what they were doing, if they were trying to find things to save from the trash. So I was playing for them, and that was interesting. And then also in that same sort of area, there's a school that's just for kids who work. So there are a lot of kids doing this kind of work, and there's a school there for them too. And I also played there. It's almost like you never know what you're going to find. It's a form of experimentation sometimes, where you just say, let's try playing here or there or here or there. And then, you know, if you do that a certain number of times, then a certain percentage of those times, you'll kind of come into something really interesting.
It's a very different kind of experience than busking in the United States, because, I mean, some of your videos also have got you wailing away in subway stations with, you know, your Bach out on the music stand.
Uh-huh. Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because maybe it was around the same time I started Parade of One, this cello player, Dale Henderson, started something called Bach in the Subways, which is when on Bach's birthday, which happens to be the same as my birthday, musicians all over the world play Bach in the subways. So then I could kind of incorporate this into future birthday parades, playing Bach in the subways.
Do you do a parade for every birthday?
Not every birthday. Depends on the year, depends on the weather, depends how I'm feeling. Because you can't always, like, just repeat that first experience. Uh-huh. And sometimes by trying, you get a little disappointed. So just depends what's going on each year.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bill and I are old enough, and you two are not, that we probably remember back to the days of ping pong diplomacy, you know, where, you know, our ping pong teams would go to China. You know, our governments weren't speaking. Mm-hmm. It strikes me what you're doing is you're doing this people to people kind of thing with your horn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is sort of like diplomacy. You know, I without the burden of having to represent or any higher power. You know, but I do have to keep in mind that I'm making an impression on people. And it is sort of human to human, person to person. Exactly. It's about the interaction. It's, you know, I sometimes people have like come up to me in these really poor places where I've been playing and they try to give me money for busking. I'm like, why are you giving me money? You know, I'm not doing this for money right now. But sometimes they're doing it because they think it's funny, because maybe there's not a tradition or habit of street performance wherever they are, and they're just like, okay, now what are we supposed to do? Go give this guy a coin or something? And then, like, so they think it's part of the fun to then, like, or little kids to then, like, give the person who's busking something.
Well, we were off air, Sarah, and you were talking about, I mean, that is a difference, I mean, in terms of the busking. You know, like, that is, you know, you're doing it to give to these people, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, a lot of kids start off busking as a way of making money and getting their music
starving
heard.
Artists.
Yeah.
Starving
yeah.
Artists.
Well, I've done it for that too.
But in America, not in Rwanda.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to try and make money off of busking, I don't recommend doing it in Africa or Southeast Asia. You know, maybe some of the subway stops in New York, which is, you know, one of the richest places in the world, is a better way to go. Because, you know, people might throw in a 20 here and there or something like that.
Speaking of busking transportation, mm-hmm. You had an interesting outlook on motorcycle traffic.
Oh, yeah.
On your website.
Yeah, that was a project I did in Ho Chi Minh City, also known as Saigon, Vietnam. And my first impression of the place when I got there was traffic, traffic, traffic. But not a traffic jam like the traffic jams here. It was way cooler because everyone's on a motorbike. So it's like a social traffic jam. They're not in their bubbles with their radios and air conditioning. Like, you'll be in the traffic jam and you're on one motorbike, and then on the next motorbike, there's a family of four with a baby sticking his tongue out at you and like another guy waving at you. People just, you can talk to the other people in the traffic jam. So then I got this idea that if traffic jams are already social there, then I could sort of, you might as well make a concert out of it. You know?
So you're riding on the back of a motorcycle with your golden thing?
Well, I didn't actually ride on the back of the motorcycle with the golden thing. I sort of on foot weaved through the traffic jams. And it was a very fun project.
We're talking with Jeremy Daneman, and he's been kind enough to stick around long enough that we can talk with him and share 2 weeks' worth of this conversation with you here on The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 in Newark. And we're going to start playing a new track that I don't think you have it on a record yet, called Honey Wine.
Yeah, that one's brand new. We just recorded that in May when our special guest from Rwanda, Sophie Zayasanga, was here. So, you know, what you're going to hear is like basically a rough mix. It hasn't been mastered or anything. So it's the raw product. Thank you.
And as this episode of the Music Room winds down, you're hearing our guest Jeremy Daneman on clarinet, his guest Sophie Nzayazenga on the inanga, a native Rwandan instrument, along with a jazz rhythm section consisting of William Parker on the bass and Tim Kuiper on the drums and percussion. We'll have more with Jeremy Daneman on a later edition of The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.